75. Clive glanced at the sheets of paper arranged on the couch. There were half a dozen of them so far. Zila had sketched the controls life-sized so there could be no confusion. Each lever and switch and push button had been reproduced. It looked like concept art for an H.G. Wells movie. He looked at Mandy. She still stared at the far wall with her mouth pressed flat. He gave her a smile, but she didn't respond. Zila had another piece of paper pressed against the panels, the pencil tucked behind her ear as she studied another cluster of switches with the flashlight. After a moment, she stretched three of her fingers away from the mini-mag. Debbie reached in and held the flashlight without moving it. They had a system going at this point. Zila slid her hand free, pulled the pencil from behind her ear, and began sketching quick lines. Clive turned his attention from the women back to Andrew. He'd been a model prisoner while the others were gone. A few minutes after Zila had started drawing, he'd gone back to his silent prayers. Something about his silence made Clive think of fish. He wasn't a huge documentary fan, but he'd seen a few undersea shows on the Discovery Channel, back before he and Debbie realized how much money they were wasting on cable for the one or two nights a week they watched television. There were plenty of eerie things in the sea, but the part that always gnawed at him was how quiet everything was. It was natural and unnatural at the same time. Sharks hunted without a sound, no growling or gnashing teeth or sniffing for scents. Fish swam in silent packs. When there was an attack, the victim would thrash and fight, but never made a peep. It was a whole world where everyone was mute. Andrew was quiet that way. It looked okay on the surface, but his silence ran deep. Natural, but unnatural. Clive shifted his grip on the shotgun. It was heavy enough to be reassuring, but not to the point that it tired him to hold it.
"I think that's it," said Zila. She tucked the pencil behind her ear again and crouched by her assembled sketches. Her hand gestured at the controls. "I've got those three banks of switches, the upper and lower rows of knobs, the levers on both sides. What about the dials?" asked Debbie.
The corner of Zila's mouth twitched. It almost looked like a grin.
"We know where all the needles are supposed to be," she said. "No point in drawing those." "Maybe just for reference," Debbie said. "Not having things written down is what's caused all this."
"Point taken."
Zila pulled the pencil out and looked up at the panels again. Clive leaned over her shoulder.
"What's the shading mean?"
"Those are the ones that don't need to move," she said. "That way we can color them in as we flip them and know which ones are done. We don't want to be flipping the same switches back and forth."
"Maybe you should make another set of pictures," said Debbie, "just in case something goes wrong."
"Also not a bad idea," said Clive.
Something moved in his peripheral vision. His attention snapped back to the prisoner. Andrew's head was up and his eyes open. He smiled and it stretched across his face. Clive thought it made him look like the Joker, not the ragged-mouthed Heath Ledger one, but the curling, plastic Jack Nicholson one.
"The Lord is coming,"
said Andrew. He said it the way most people talked about grocery lists or the Netflix queue. His head drifted side to side like a charmed snake.
"He's coming to smash this awful place to dust."
Nate pumped the pedals of his bike. He could see Tim leaning over his handlebars and Veek churning her feet in circles. Roger grunted behind them. They were 10 minutes and a good quarter mile away from the ridge when the first shift hit them. The Kavach building jumped out to the horizon, a distant speck. They kept cranking the pedals. Nothing had come out of the pit yet, at least nothing they could see. There was noise, though, a low rumble. It was the sound of hundreds of feet in motion, an avalanche of footsteps, a stampede. The four of them urged their bikes to go faster. Tim glanced over his shoulder and frowned.
"Why isn't it chasing us?"
He sounded annoyed by the idea. Nate looked back, too. The distance shifted again for a moment as he did, doubling or tripling behind them. He could see figures coming over the ridge, but the air was still empty. He thought about the great squale feeding in the pit and choosing its targets. "We're running," said Nate with a glance at Veek. He looked forward again. "It likes it when we try to run."
"They're out of the pit,"
shouted Roger.
"I saw,"
he called back. Veek threw a glance over her shoulder. Her glasses shifted and she had to grab at them. The bike wobbled and she dropped back a few feet.
"What are they riding?"
Roger turned his head back to the ridge.
Looks like they're riding big bugs or something.
Bugs?
Nate checked where the other three bikes were and took a long look over his shoulder. He saw dozens of scuttling figures in the distance with their cloaks whipping behind them, maybe hundreds. His mind fought the image for a minute, insisting it had to be another trick of the light. The overseers had dropped to all fours, two legs and two arms splayed out and grabbed at the ground. They looked like insects skittering up a wall or crabs scuttling across the ocean floor. They clawed and pulled themselves across the sand after the bicyclists. Their torsos folded back at an angle that would doom a human to life in a wheelchair. They looked like stunted centaurs joined to their mount halfway up the ribs instead of the hips. Two legs and two arms on the ground meant they had one free to hold a spear up over their lopsided shoulders, ready to be thrown like a javelin. Their hoods had fallen back. Nate was too far to see details of their faces. He was sure it wouldn't be pretty. The overseers moved as fast as the bicycles, at least. Roger let go of the handlebars with one hand and fumbled with his holster.
Don't bother, Tim called over to him. It'd be a tough shot if we were standing still. You're never going to hit anything.
Might scare 'em, said Roger.
Veek shook her head.
They see that thing every day of their lives and you think a pistol's going to scare them?
Just keep going, yelled Nate. The only place we're going to be safe is back in Kavach.
And stop looking back, said Tim. It just slows us down.
They pedaled hard for another 10 minutes. Nate was sweating. It wasn't warm, but they'd been pushing themselves for almost half an hour now. His eyes flicked to either side. Veek was dripping and he could tell she was fighting to keep her breath even. Roger was panting but keeping up the pace. Reality flickered again and the Kavach building jumped a mile closer. It was a few hundred yards away. They could see the slabs of concrete between the windows, the faux columns, and the lintel over the door. Nate risked a glance back. The overseer bugs had fallen behind. Or maybe it was just the shifting perspective. One of them flicked its third arm, something rippled in the air near the shaft, and a dark line raced past Nate's temple. A heartbeat later, he felt a breeze shift his hair and heard something slice the air. A clatter came from the concrete slab of the building. He turned his head and saw Roger's wide eyes.
Oh, shit.
Another spear whizzed by them like a bullet. Its tip cracked on the concrete ahead of them. A third one hit the ground and buried itself halfway in the sand.
Jesus, said Tim. How fast are they throwing those things?
It was another 300 feet to the building, then 200. Veek wheezed hard but waved for them to keep going. Roger pulled ahead and took the lead of the little pack. Tim coughed hard, and out of the corner of his eye, Nate saw the other man pull something out of his shirt. He glanced over and remembered Tim was wearing a t-shirt. There was no way to pull something out of it, or to hide anything under it. Tim stopped pedaling. He was holding something up to his chest with one hand. It looked like a shorter version of the javelin the guards were throwing. This one was a foot long, and it glistened in the dim light as if covered with wet paint. Tim plowed into the sand. Nate skidded to an awkward halt. Veek swerved around him, saw what he was looking at, and stumbled to a stop.
Oh, God,
she said. Nate leaped off his bike and ran to him. Tim's face stretched and twisted. He coughed and blood flecks sprayed across the sand. His shirt was red and slick where the spear had pushed between his ribs and his sternum. 5 feet of it hung out his back and kept him lying on his side. Come on, Nate said. He squeezed Tim's hand. Come on, we can make it. It's right over there. Tim looked up at them and shook his head. He waved them away.
Go.
Something wet filled his throat and made him gargle his words. The blood around the spear hissed and sucked at the air. Nate looked up. The overseers were close. He tried to guess where the shift was and if they'd passed it already. Veek grabbed Tim's arm. He shook her off and tried to roll away. The spear shifted in his chest and he screamed. He grabbed Nate's shirt with his bloody hand.
Go,
he yelled.
Get everyone safe.
Everyone means you too, old man. He slapped Nate, but the strength was gone from his hand.
Told you I'd kick your ass,
Tim wheezed. His head lolled back to look at the overseers and he pawed at his holster with weak fingers.
Get home. I'll buy you some time.
And then he died.